Welcome back to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome Matt and Giles onto the podcast today. They founded Sculpt alongside business partner Guy at the peak, just as we were about to go into lockdown, our first lockdown last year, and have since sold over 100,000 at-home pottery kits since launch. Beyond that, they've built partnerships with some of the most influential brands in the UK, including Bloom & Wild, Miss Oma and Papier, just to name but a few. In this episode, we discuss the challenges that come along with building a business in lockdown, the role of social media in the formation of Sculpt communities, and the importance of finding joy in work. Give this episode a little like and a subscribe, and sit back, relax, and enjoy. So let's dive in then to the business, because I, as I say, I've seen so much of you in the last 18 months, and I think I really want to know a little bit more about how it started and how you got into it. So do you want to both tell me about your careers pre-Sculpt?
Yeah, sure. I started off in a B2B marketing software business. At the time I joined at a very early stage, I think we're about 8 people. And by the time I left to do Sculpt, we were 90. So kind of went through that whole growth journey in a tech business. And one of the most interesting bits for me was we worked with a lot of retail and direct-to-consumer startups, and so got a really great insight into those businesses, and always had a kind of a latent interest in consumer businesses, and eventually made the jump by starting Sculpt.
Nice.
Yeah, and my journey was slightly different, whereas Giles joined a startup, I joined a bigger company. So I joined a management consulting firm, which has globally around 400 to 500,000 people. So a very big company. And I essentially worked with clients to help them set up businesses. But in particular, I worked on the technology side, helping them build direct-to-consumer digital products. So spent a lot of time on the digital side. And that's why I find it very interesting now coming to something like Sculpt, where you're working with physical products and you're working with supply chains. I didn't do that in my past career, so it's quite interesting to move into that.
And then there's a third founder, isn't there, who's poorly today?
Yeah, Guy can't make it. He's got a killer headache. But he comes from a creative background, and so very different to me and Matt, but he's the kind of brains behind everything that you see. So when you're getting all your lovely Instagram ads, those are created by him. And he's done all the copywriting, brand design, etc.
Amazing. So three really different backgrounds. Did you know each other before then? Were you friends and then?
Yeah, we've been mates for about 15 years.
Nice. And then you decided you wanted to do something together.
I think we've always had those chats where, you know, we've all had a shared interest in entrepreneurship for various different reasons. And always, you know, wanted to go and do it. And so there was always a kind of a desire to do it. And so when we decided to do this, it was kind of obvious.
Yeah. And then how did it come about? How did Sculpt come about? Well, first, do you want to tell the listeners, if they've not seen it, because I've seen it quite a lot. Do you want to tell the listeners about Sculpt first before we jump into how it came about?
Yeah, sure. So Sculpt is a home craft business, and we're most well known for our home pottery kits. So we're making pottery accessible and fun by delivering pottery kits to your door. You can make all sorts of things like trinket dishes, candles, et cetera, and we're really here to kind of reinvent pottery.
Amazing. So when did it launch? Because it launched at quite a pivotal time, didn't it, in our recent history?
Yeah, launched in April last year.
And had you always planned it? Had you been planning to do a pottery business, or did you see an opportunity?
There are lots of things that were happening at the same time. So the short answer is no, we weren't planning this for a long time. In my previous business, I was working with a lot of craft companies and knew that they were just really great businesses. They've got really loyal customers, especially if you can take someone from a kind of a beginner to sort of developing through the skill ranges to becoming proficient. And obviously the world was going through a lot of change, the UK especially, kind of heading towards lockdown. And we kind of got together and we were talking about other crafts, and pottery especially is a craft that has never been modernized. And so if you speak to someone, we speak to our customers now, you ask them, when did you last do pottery or have you done it? They go, oh yeah, I used to do it at school and I absolutely loved it. Or yeah, I've done it once with my friends at a studio in London. But none of them have kind of ever done it at home. None of them have ever done it in a format that's kind of a bit more accessible, but all of them absolutely love it when they do it. And so the opportunity was to bring that craft into the kind of modern format, and with lots of great content and really great, get people who perhaps would write themselves off about going to a kind of pottery studio into the craft and really loving it.
And about the Great Pottery Showdown didn't do you any harm either. I love that programme. It's just so amazing, the stuff that they produce.
Yeah, very. That was great. That was in this January. I actually got in a bit of trouble for using their trademark a bit too closely.
Did you?
But yeah. All turned out well in the end. But yeah, we had a lot of customers who kind of started watching the thread and then ended up becoming customers of ours.
I was going to ask that, whether it increased customers because of the fact that that was on. Because they do just create absolutely incredible. The stuff you can do with pottery is just amazing. It's like a piece of clay that you make into something. I did it in lockdown. I ended up making mugs. And I've still got them and I use them all the time. And I'm like, I don't know how that came from this one slab into something now that I can use and put in the dishwasher. It's so smart. So you started it by noticing a trend of people wanting to do more craft and then feeling like it was... I mean, an incredible time, really, to launch something that was helping people's creativity at home when they were stuck in their houses and getting a bit bored of watching everything on Netflix. How did you find the experience of building a business in lockdown?
Yeah, well, it was very fast and furious, to be honest with you. So I think Giles gave me a call to really get stuff kicked off. We've been discussing it for a while, but then Giles gave me a call and was like, let's get started on this. We've got to just get started. So that's a Sunday evening. And then in the week that happened after that, we found suppliers for pieces. We got the stock to my house, not much. We started with 10 kits worth, so 10 products. And we built a site. Guy spent a lot of his time building the site, building all the creative. And within 1 week, essentially, we had the site live and we sold our first kit. It was fast and furious. We had jobs at the same time, so it was a lot of evening work, working into the night, but we managed to get it done in a week. And I think the main driver behind that was, at that time, this was the first lockdown in the UK, we all thought that we would just have one lockdown and that would be it and we'd get back on with our lives. So we thought, we've got to get going with this right now. You know, we had that motivation to get it done quickly.
And what was the most challenging part, or what's been the biggest challenge, do you think, in such a quick trajectory of growth?
Yeah, so we've had so many challenges along the way, and they all kind of, they grow as the business has grown. But in that first week, you know, we had very different challenges to what we have now. So in that first week, the main challenge was getting suppliers in lockdown. In the first lockdown, a lot of businesses did shut down, and especially businesses that are more traditional, older businesses like pottery studios and pottery suppliers, they really just shut down. So it was quite hard getting connections, getting stock and getting started there. So that was one challenge. Another challenge was that we were actually doing this all from my living room. So
15 years of friendship was a little bit tested in that first
week.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So there was quite awkward parts where, you know, we'd get a pallet of clay delivered to a residential street. So my neighbours were kind of looking out the window going, what the hell are these guys doing? What's this pallet of clay that's just being delivered? So those were some of the funny challenges in the start that we had.
See, this is why you need to document it all for your own version of Shoe Dog.
Yeah.
I thought that when I was reading it, I was like, I need to remember these moments as the company grows. Like, there's been pivotal things that have happened, good and bad and pretty ugly at times. But I wish I'd written them down so I could document it somewhere. So that's a tip I'll probably give you.
One thing we've done all the way through is make sure we take loads of photos of everything.
Oh, amazing.
Even at the time, if they feel so boring, like that palette of clay being delivered, in hindsight, it's just so nice to look back and see. And you know, even during the terrible times, we just you know, have always taken a picture, and it's so fun now to look back and kind of reminisce on those things.
Just to go off on a slight tangent, it's really interesting because I think we're so always, especially when you're in fast growth businesses that I can sympathize with, you're always focused on what the next thing is, when in reality, the thing that actually makes you the most happiest is looking back and being grateful for what you have done. So I'm glad that you've said you've taken pictures, because I don't think I've got enough of them. And I really do wish that I'd started writing stuff down earlier. But part of the podcast, I guess, that I do is that sort of time capsule of journeys, and it's amazing really to think about achieving. You've done so much in such a short space of time. At what point did you think, like, you were working full time and you were also doing this as a bit of a side hustle? When was the moment where you were like, right, no, I've got to quit, I can't do both? Did you all have that at the same time, or did you do it separately?
So Guy was a freelance creative, and so he could kind of sort of take on more or less work as needed. I'd say he probably put in more time in the early days. Me and Matt were full time. I think for me personally, in hindsight, waited way too long to kind of jump ship. And obviously really easy to say that in hindsight, but the period where Sculpt was really kind of taking off and I was working another job was probably the most stressful time of my life. I would strongly recommend anyone in the same position to, make a decision one way or the other as quickly as possible. We kind of sat down, we talked through kind of what our plans were. It was obviously quite difficult because we, going into it, we knew that lockdown had a positive effect on the kind of the start of the business. And there was so much uncertainty looking forwards. And myself and Matt are obviously really kind of, we were very kind of career driven at the time. So our jobs kind of meant quite a lot to us personally. And so it was a big decision. And Matt actually got me and he said, look, you know, you do realize you've got to quit your job. And you know, there's this one video by Jeff Bezos, and he sort of weighs up the decision of himself leaving his job at the time for Amazon, saying, you know, when you're old and you look back, are you going to regret it or not? You know, obviously a very simple statement, but that kind of framing was really helpful to me.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
So you jumped first, did you, Matt? You went first.
Yeah, but Giles wasn't long after. And it was just the same. It's I really enjoyed my job before, but really simply, I just enjoyed Sculpt way more. So I was just wondering why I was spending all my working day working for the other job and then Sculpt in the evenings. We had such a good opportunity of Sculpt. It felt like if we wanted to do it the best, it could be we needed to give it our all. And that wasn't just evening work. And it also felt weird to me that we, at that time, we had actually moved to two different locations. So we're out of my house at this point. We're actually in a warehouse with an office space, and we had a team working there every day. So it just felt quite weird to me that I had a team working there and I was working on something else. Yeah. Didn't really sit right. And then behind all of this, we were coming up to peak, to Christmas. And I just knew it was going to be successful. So there was just no point working on something else. So those are the kind of reasons that made me go. And to be honest, it was the right decision, definitely.
Mm. I want to ask you, because you just mentioned about a team and you started growing a team. How did you find it bringing a team together in lockdown and also trying to create a culture? Did you think before, well, obviously it all happened very quickly, so you probably might not have had thoughts around this is how I want the culture of the team to be, and this is how I want to be known as an employer. Did it all happen very quickly, or did you kind of have an idea, and how have you managed to do that in times where we've got people working from home, people working in an office, and you maybe not meeting them for a while?
Yeah, I'd say, so it's been really hard, really, really hard. And I think in the first instance, the first challenge we had was scaling up production. So we do production in-house ourselves. And when order volumes are doubling week on week, you know, very quickly got to the point where me, Matt and Guy in his living room just couldn't actually make enough of the kits to satisfy demand. And so we had to find somewhere else. During COVID lockdown, there's obviously very kind of strict rules and making sure that everyone was safe. And so that added on additional complexity in kind of building out the team. And so we kind of scaled up the production team sort of piecemeal as kind of demand increased. And then everything else, one of the biggest challenges was actually finding space. We didn't have office space. And so that was a challenge. I'd say looking back on it now, that was apart from sort of buying stock, actually kind of staffing the team was a really big challenge. And I'm very grateful now we've got a proper office and a space that's big enough so that we can invest in the team, we can bring everyone together and be a bit more purposeful with kind of how we want to build the team and how we want to kind of work together. And I'd say in the first 6 months or so, it wasn't the case that we were thinking about those things all the time. We were trying to kind of just scale with demand.
Mm. It's hard. It's really hard. And I think I was talking to someone this morning about how to keep team morale and culture special in the midst of like the aftermath of what we've been through in the last 18 months. And also the thing that we're going through now is obviously the Great Resignation, as they're naming it, across many, many industries. So it might be quite good for you guys because you're such a new, exciting company. You're probably attracting quite a lot of talent, being the shiny new thing and quite a creative space to be in. But it isn't easy to try and build teams right now and keep them engaged and aligned to culture, especially if you're working from home, because you can do your work for any company. You could close your laptop one day for that company and start another one for another company the next day. It's really hard. So I can't even imagine how you've managed to go and find the right people when you're also trying to scale so quickly, because the demand has been so high. So credit to you, because I'm struggling to cope with it. And your friendship now, so you've grown massively. It was funny at the beginning going after that. So how are you doing now? After, has it changed the dynamics? You've all got set roles, I guess, and you all look after different things.
Yeah, I think about this quite a lot, because I thought it would have changed our friendship more than it has done. And some of the stressful moments and what's at stake that we've been through in the last year, I think would have tested friendships more. I'd say that people often like ask, like our other mates will ask us, you know, what's it like working with Matt and Guy? Are they complete weirdos? And I think the reason why it's worked as well as it has done is actually that we're better suited to working with each other than we ever realized. We've all got very different skill sets that are complementary and different approaches to problems and, you know, bring different things to the table. And I honestly don't think I would have been able to, you know, I know that I would not have been able to start this business without the other two. And, you know, some of the moments that we've been through and the way that we've supported each other and just kind of got on with solving the problems, it's been one of the best things about the business. And I think that's by no stroke of planning and kind of character assessments before we did this. It's just worked out that way. And I think that's been brilliant.
Nice.
Yeah. I really take my hat off to solo founders out there, because we've gone through a huge amount of issues, just normal startup issues along the way that pile on the stress. And because it's your startup, you take that stress very personally. And to some people, it can feel, and sometimes like myself, it feels like it's a bit of the end of the world, some of these issues. But having two other founders to run the business with is so nice, because you can just put the stress on all of us, which is, I think, has been amazing to have that.
Share the stress.
Share the stress, yeah.
Yeah,
and take it off me.
It's like, you know, you can't go to your mum and say, I can't find any cardboard anywhere. My business is going to fold, because they won't. Your mum won't understand. Your mum won't understand the context, and you know, she'll give you some like reassurance. But having two others that know the context of everything and can support in the right ways, it's just been a massive benefit.
Amazing. And before we go into a little bit, the next bit I'm going to talk about is creative and hobbies. But what I'd really love to know is like what the next thing is for Sculpt. So started with pottery. I know that you're launching some quite new exciting things, and also international expansion. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about what's to come?
Yeah. So from, I think on the fifth day of operating, we got our first international order from the US. And it kind of started, you know, carried on like that. And international kind of for our products has been quite so evident from the beginning. And so we're working a lot on international expansion. We launched in Canada last week, which we're really excited by. And so plan for next year will be kind of continuing on that theme. And then in terms of new products, we've got some really exciting ones that I can't give all the details of right now. But what the kind of the common thread that unites all of our products is they are, you know, really amazing fun. They connect you with a craft. They get you kind of working with your hands, making something that you really enjoy kind of once you've made it. And, you know, you've had fun during that process. Pottery is an amazing craft for that very reason. It's really therapeutic. We've recently launched newer products in candle making, which is kind of, you know, along a similar line. So we're kind of expanding in that direction. And we've got some really exciting new products that are launching before the end of the year. So very excited about those.
Amazing. Can't wait to see those. So I'm going to go into a little bit about consumers and what you've seen from consumers and creativity, because you obviously managed to, you had the thought about craft anyway, but then we went into lockdown. Do you think that your business would have grown as quickly if we hadn't had the pandemic?
No, it wouldn't have.
So you were actually, what do you think it was about lockdown and people being at home that pushed people into that creative need?
So I was speaking to customers about this and kind of their experience using the products, and especially in lockdown is a kind of you've relinquished control of your life, and that brings with it anxieties, and you know, you can't go and find a lot of your normal outlets that, you know, you may have before, seeing friends, seeing family, and so crafts is something that can alleviate some of those stresses and really kind of get you you know, doing things with your hands and kind of taking your mind off things. And so a lot of our early customers that are sort of related to buying in lockdown used it really for kind of alleviating stress and things like that. But then most of them actually came out of that and said, oh, I actually really enjoyed that, and, you know, have carried on since then. I think the kind of the overall learning that we've got from a lot of customers is that our normal age range of customers, which are mostly millennials, just need a little nudge to get into crafts. And once they do, they actually enjoy it a lot more than they thought. Most people think it's not compatible with their lifestyle. And I think lockdown kind of made it a real option for people. And if since then, people have kind of learned to love it.
I don't know if this like relates to what you've seen in your business as well, but I think from my own experience in lockdown, I was looking for to support companies that were either starting out or local things that I could give my support to. Do you think that also was a factor to Sculpt's growth?
Yeah, it was amazing to see the change in customer sentiment through our customer service inbox as lockdown progressed. And so when it first started, people sometimes, you know, as a startup, things go wrong. So we had deliveries that would turn up and have been thrown in the bin, or, you know, have been turned up, crushed to pieces. And the customer sentiment at that point, probably because we're a small business, was just so kind. People were really willing to wait. They didn't mind that things weren't perfect. And I've certainly seen now, coming out of lockdown, that sentiment has changed, probably in line with the perception that we're a bigger business now, but it's been a really interesting transition to see people who, you know, would happily wait another week to people who, you know, probably expect the normal experience of receiving things the next day all the time.
Do you think we've got like patient to impatient again? Do you reckon that's what's happened? We've been let back into the world and now we're all just cranky again.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of conversation about, will we ever drink again? I really enjoy this time that I don't have to go out and see my friends. But as rules have been relaxed, I think society in general is kind of returning to how it was before.
And have you seen a shift in consumers then? Has it been different from people who were buying in lockdown to who are now? Are they more regular customers that you've had previously, or are you still getting a lot of new ones now that we're not all trapped in our houses thinking what can I do today, tomorrow, next week?
So our biggest segment is actually people gifting our products to other people, and so that's actually remained largely unchanged. And so people buy it either to give it to someone remotely, or they buy it and do it with their friends together. And so that's been largely unchanged. There is a segment of people who have fallen off during as we kind of come out of lockdown, but our core segments are have actually been largely unchanged.
Yeah. That's cool.
In lockdown, there were lots of people buying for themselves or for individuals. As we've kind of got out of lockdown, we've seen people buying the products for more social times. So buying a product to bring to a dinner party to enjoy with 10 friends. So we've seen a lot more of that kind of social buying as well to enjoy the kits.
Nice. And I've seen as well, you've done quite a lot of brand collaborations with, I had Blooming Wild on the podcast last year, and other really quite exciting brands. I find your brand of Blooming Wild and the others that you've worked with quite exciting, forward-thinking digital brands. What do you think, what was that decision about? How did you come to that, and what benefits do you think it brought?
So I guess we were always thinking about brand partnerships, and one of the ways that we wanted to do it slightly differently to a lot of kind of very surface level partnerships that we normally see is we really want to create a partnership where you can create a product that is better than the sum of its parts. And so the Blooming Wild collaboration was one where, Blooming Wild are the best at, they have the most beautiful flowers in the market. They're also a really amazing brand. And so we also saw a lot of our customers trying to make sort of flower vases and things like that. So it was a really great tie-in that created a really compelling product. And then obviously, the combined reach of two brands is going to be bigger than ours. So that was kind of core to our strategy and still is going forwards.
Nice. You don't see it very often, but I think it's really smart to link up with like-minded potential customers. And they're so good with their data collection and how they use their data as well at Blooming Wild. I was amazed by their forward-thinking approach to customers. So, it was nice to see that two great brands are coming together to create something that could be a really joint experience. Moving on then, because your social media has been pivotal to the growth of the company. Just in terms of social and it being... There's a lot of talk on the internet about how you use it as a waste of time and it creates comparison and there's a lot of negatives, but I try and shine a light on the positives, both from a business perspective, but also from a personal perspective. In terms of the business and the role of social media, what role do you think it has played in the growth of where you are now?
It's really funny. We've got this document that we wrote in the first week of us existing, and it was like an MVP. What are the things that we need to test and see if they'll work? And one of them is we need to be able to create a really compelling Instagram feed by making loads of lovely pieces. And as soon as our customers started buying, we just started seeing all these tagged posts, tagged stories. And we just were not expecting it at all. And one of the things that's been such a surprise is just the amazing breadth of creativity in our customers and the type of reaction that kind of gets from potential customers, from fans of the brand who will kind of comment saying, oh, how do you do this? How do you make that? What paints did you use? And I think it's brilliant. I think it's great to kind of showcase people's creativity. And ultimately, once you've made a piece, like your mugs, you feel quite proud about it. And you know, even if they're not perfect, you get a sense of pride that you've made that thing, and that kind of drives a lot of the social media kind of content that you see on our Instagram and in our stories. So yeah, I think on the whole for us, I think it's been really nice. I think it's been just, I think the most rewarding bit is just seeing people interacting, our customers who don't know each other, just chatting about their piece, and you know, even just saying, "I absolutely love this." It's really nice.
Community creation is one of the biggest powers that you can build as a brand on social, and you've definitely got that. You're building a community of people who will talk about each other's craft and talk about, like you say, the paints. And I think you can't really go wrong on social, because you're creating a really positive space that people will want to keep going back to as well, which is hard because you're fighting against everything else that's going on there at one point. So yeah, congratulations to you on that, because I think it's incredibly hard to do it, and most brands are trying to do it, but I haven't managed to find how to do it. And you've not only managed to create a brand that's helped a lot of people in lockdown, but also found something that you can help create communities on social with. I'm going to finish up now with your admission submission, because it's really interesting, especially based on all the conversations that we've had. So before the podcast, I asked you to come on with an admission submission of your own. And the podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, because in every episode I try and open up with honesty and talk about subjects that perhaps someone in my role as an MD would usually avoid. So I talked about things like imposter syndrome, anxiety, fear of failure, et cetera, et cetera. So would you mind sharing with me your admission of something that you probably shouldn't say, whether that's about your struggles and you've faced during your career, a secret about your lockdown experience, or something that you're trying to overcome? So I'm going to pass over to you. I shouldn't say this, but...
So ours is, I shouldn't say this, but I sometimes miss the simplicity of a salaried job.
Which is really interesting based on what you've told me about how much you've enjoyed the journey and the growth. So what was it about the salaried job that felt simpler?
I think there's, for me, especially in the early days as a first-time founder, very acutely missed the external validation that you get in a salaried role. There will always be someone who will say, yes, this is the right thing to do, or no, that's not the right thing to do. Maybe do it like this. And when you move into a leadership role in your own startup, and the kinds of decisions that you have to make during that process under a lot of stress with not very much time to make them, often I go, oh God, you know, I wish someone would just tell me the answer. And that's something, you know, that I, you know, still, when there are difficult decisions to make, or, you know, there's certain things you're going through, you go, well, actually, wouldn't it be way easier if someone just told me?
Yeah, I'm always waiting for that. It is hard. And the harder you get, the further you get up as well, even if you're in a company where you're not the founder like I am, I feel exactly the same. Some days I'm like, I don't want to make these decisions today. I want someone to tell me what to do. And you can't get away from it, can you? Which is why I ring my dad, and then my dad gives me completely the wrong advice, because he's got no idea what I do for a living. So like you said about your mum, my dad, as much help as my dad is, he's not a great sounding board for work. Do you think that's been an instant feeling, or is that built up over time that you've looked back and thought sometimes it would have been simpler?
I think it's been over the entire course, but there's always ups and downs. So, you know, we have great times, but there are always the downs as well when you're running your own startup. And it's when you have those down periods, you go, why are we doing this? We should have just stuck with the paycheck. But I think for me, it's running a startup, the problems, they're all yours. Whereas if you're working for someone else, you have problems, but in reality, they're not yours. They're your bosses, they're the companies. And because of that, you can just turn your laptop off at 6 o'clock and you can go and get on with your life. What I've found hard with this in the downtimes are you can't turn the laptop off and get on with your life, really, because the issues are yours. If you don't solve the issues and you just turn your laptop off, you're just putting your head in the sand, and it'll be way worse the next day. And I think we've all found this last year when we were growing incredibly fast. We were manufacturing the products all ourselves. There were periods where we were trying to fulfill over 1,000 orders a day ourselves from our warehouse. Stuff got really tough, and there are points where the stress would go with you home. You'd find it hard to go to sleep, because I always had, when I was sleeping, I was trying to solve issues while I was sleeping, which is the worst thing to do, because you can't sleep. I think that's the problems are your own, and you've got to solve them.
And you can't see, you can switch your laptop up, but you can't switch your mind off. That's the problem I find. Like, even if I'm trying to distract myself from it, it's still going round in there, like you say. I have to journal sometimes before I go to sleep, because otherwise I can't sleep. Do you think that social media is actually to blame for a lot of this sort of glamorization of entrepreneurs, and without the reality of it? Do you think there's a part to play there? I think it's part of an issue.
Yeah, I completely agree that social media is doing that. And I think that that gets a lot more people into the kind of funnel of becoming an entrepreneur. But I think from that point onwards, it is the reality of being an entrepreneur is so far removed from what most kind of social media will portray. And so I think once you're in it, I don't look at social media now and think, oh, I'm an entrepreneur and therefore I should kind of look and feel like this person does. I speak to other founders and go, can you give me a hand finding out about these tax regulations in America, please? And, you know, it's not glamorous, and it's not anything like kind of what you would normally see on social media. I think that people have unrealistic expectations coming into entrepreneurship now. And I think, you know, those people will kind of very quickly realize it's not all that it seems.
What would be your biggest tip for someone who is maybe on that cusp of, maybe they're that point that you were, where you were still getting your salary and they were about to take that leap into their own business? What would your advice be? I think I might know what you say here based on what you've just said there.
Oh, I don't know. I would say make sure it really excites you. Make sure that when things are going well, that you get a really, really, pure sense of enjoyment. Because that will kind of ultimately guide you and kind of where you want to go. And it kind of is a litmus test for, is this actually what is going to drive you forwards?
Yeah, I agree. Work must feel like play or it won't work. You have to be happy working. It's going to sound a bit crazy, but working late at night and not feeling like it's a chore, that you actually want to do that, because you are going to do a lot of it over the period. So if you don't enjoy that, you just won't be able to stick it out.
Amazing. And on the flip side of it, what are the benefits?
I've really enjoyed building a team here. And I think that's one of the most rewarding things about starting a business, is bringing people together and, now starting to see them with their own successes in the projects they're running, is just hugely rewarding. That's the kind of a beyond all the kind of milestone hitting, that's a real deep sense of satisfaction I get.
Yeah. From what we've said so far, we've said a lot about, the hardships of starting up a company.
Yeah.
I thought I'd flip it slightly. We're going to a lot of the positives.
It's been amazing. And I recommend that anyone that wants to do it, definitely jump in, but make sure you do enjoy that. But if you feel that you do, dive straight in and do it, because it's been amazing. It's definitely been hard times, but the highs are so much higher than those lows. And it can be really small things that that you enjoy, and it makes you feel like you're a weirdo. But even stuff like, we had big deliveries of stock when it was tough to get stock in lockdown. We were cheering outside at the delivery man when he delivered all the goods, which is really weird to everyone else. But for us, that was such a high for us. So I recommend just diving in head first if you enjoy it.
Amazing. Do you think you've learned more about yourself than you would have done in your salaried career?
Yeah, for me personally, there's nowhere to hide. And I think to be successful, you need to be very honest with yourself and with the people immediately around you. And I think you can kind of get away with that to a certain extent if it's not your own business. But in this environment, there's a certain purity to you have to be vulnerable. You have to be honest with yourself about what you're good at and what you're not good at and what you've done well and what you haven't done well. And I think that's for me has been a kind of a steep curve coming into running this business, and something that I've enjoyed. It's felt really uncomfortable at times, but looking back on kind of how I've developed as a person, I think that's been something that I'm really pleased with.
Matt, you found you like the delivery of pallets. That's what you've discovered.
Well, I think with startups, we're lucky. There's three of us, but you've got to wear so many hats. So even just skill wise, you've got to skill yourself up in so many different things. You've got to be good at advertising, but you've also got to be good at HR. You've got to be good at accounting, but you've got to be good at supply chains as well. So even in that respect, you've got to skill yourself up very quickly, which is fun. But if you're a solo founder, it must be really, really tough.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. It's been I could talk to you for ages, but I don't want to keep you because I know you're very busy. But thank you so much for your time. I want to wish you the best of luck with the continued growth, and thank you for providing a little bit of joy to so many people when it was probably the hardest time that we will ever go through. So congratulations, and I wish you all the luck for the future.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for having us.
It's been so lovely to speak to Matt and Giles today, and I'm so grateful for them coming along and sharing their experiences and listening just to how their friendship has lent into something that has just helped so many people through a really difficult time and continues to spark our creativity. So I'll be back with another episode of I Shouldn't Say This But next week. See you soon.